Right. Welcome, everyone. This is the talk, Enhancing Insurers' Financial Management Using Monthly DFA Models, by Francis Beans and Scott Collins. I'll just read some quick bios. So Francis graduated from ANU in 2005 with an actuarial degree and a law degree, and it started Finity in 2006. So he's worked there ever since, and it's just one more year to go until he gets his long service leave. At Finity, Francis spends a good deal of time working in the volatility and capital management practice, working on capital modeling and risk and uncertainty topics for a variety of insurers and schemes. On to Scott. So Scott is one of the founders and a principal of Finity. So following a very brief stint as an electrical engineer, Scott has been working in the general insurance industry for the past 25 years. As a consulting actuary, he has worked on a broad array of industry issues and with a large number of insurers, including appointed actuary roles at six different insurers. At Finity, he leads the volatility and capital management practice, which specializes in the development and strategic use of internal capital models. Since 2005, his practice has developed capital models for 36 insurers and completed well over 100 assignments on topics relating to the development of operational capital targets, risk-based allocation of capital to business units and product lines, dividend strategy, asset mix optimization, and the design of reinsurance programs. So after all that, over to Francis and Scott.
Thank you, Francois, for those very kind words. And thank you for turning up to the session with possibly the longest name in the title. What we're talking about is, oh, I should just make sure I can do this. Yes, good. All right. Talking about monthly DFA. And from the perspective of primarily a CFO or a finance manager, somebody who has to do things with monthly accounts and might like some idea of monthly uncertainty. Why would they want that? Oh, sorry, outline of presentation. Yes, what is monthly DFA is where we'll start. And then what's the point? Why would you bother doing it? Followed by some of the issues that you would want to consider if you're thinking about developing a monthly DFA model. And then a few of the implementation issues at the end. So, where do we start? All insurance companies will have a budget, and they'll have some kind of financial projection model. Many insurance companies will also have a DFA model, and it will typically be an annual model. It'll typically be used for annual type questions, things like reinsurance design, setting capital targets, setting investment strategy, things that happen once a year or the board approves something once a year. Budgets and forecasts tend to happen on a monthly basis. A budget will be set at the start of the year, and then actuals will be compared against that budget every single month. There may be reforecasts, they might be quarterly, they might be on an ad hoc basis. And some of the time, people will say, well, what's the probability of us meeting budget? Now, at the start of the year, if you have an annual DFA, that's easy because you've got your model, you've run it, you've got a nice distribution, and you can say the probability is X percent, and here's the percentiles of this distribution. Once you start moving through the year, though, that probability changes. It reduces or increases depending on what your profile looks like. So the idea behind monthly DFA is being able to put some uncertainty estimates around numbers throughout the year. Why can't we just take our annual number and just linearly interpolate it down to the end point? There's a number of things which are different at a monthly level than at an annual level for a DFA model. And they include seasonality in premiums, seasonality in claims costs, and also seasonality in the volatility of claims costs. Actuarial valuations. Actuaries have a tendency to go and change things, and that crystallises at various points in the year. And there could be other one-off processes, such as an IT project, which will happen at a particular time during the year. we want our monthly model to capture these features, but we don't want to get we don't want it to be overly complex and overly complicated. So we don't necessarily need to take a full annual DFA model and make it 12 times as complicated. What we want to do is have a model which is simpler than the annual DFA model. It can take account of monthly dynamics, things like seasonality and different levels of volatility, but it can still give you the answers that you want in terms of probability distributions. Okay, here's the pièce de résistance, the whole point of doing it. When you make allowances for the monthly factors, for seasonality in premium, seasonality in claims, and things like that, you get a pattern of uncertainty that is very different to uniform. Depending on the insurer, of course. Some insurers may have something which is reasonably uniform. Some insurers will have something that's definitely not uniform. Most insurers are probably closer to the not uniform end of the spectrum, though. What these graphs are showing is distributions of uncertainty, and they're showing it at a monthly level. So the graph on the left is a distribution of monthly profit. The black line is the mean, and it's what the average profit is expected to be. And then beyond that, there are the percentiles. And it has a distinct shape. You can see there are two spikes, and those spikes correlate, in this example, hypothetical insurer, to actuarial valuations. That's when the actuaries get excited. There's also a dip and an increase in uncertainty in the middle over the summer months. And for this hypothetical insurer, that correlates to cat season. Putting those things together, we get a nice distribution of profit for each month. And so we can use that to answer questions each month. You know, our profit was $100 million. Is that good or bad? It's definitely better than budget, but is it unusually better than budget, or is it just, you know, within the normal realms of uncertainty? That depends, you know, on which month you're looking at. So having that distribution by month can help answer those sorts of questions. It's also helpful for reforecasts. When you get to February and the CFO says, I want to do a reforecast, tell me what the profit is, and then we also want to know what our confidence intervals are around those. We can't use our annual DFA model because it only tells us a one-year measure, but by using a monthly DFA model, we can say at February, we can read off the chart and say once we get to February, you know, the expected profit is X, and we can add a confidence interval around that expected profit as well. They're exciting questions for CFOs. Another exciting question is, what's the probability of beating budget? Which boards often ask. And if all you have is an annual model, you can answer the question at the start of the year. It's difficult, though, as you get through the year to estimate what that would be. But with a monthly model, you can answer that with a reasonable degree of comfort that there's some rigour behind your answer. And that's what this graph shows, an estimate of, we get to January, we're doing a reforecast for the remaining 5 months of the year. We have our original budget, which is the orange line, and we can read off the probability of achieving that budget. In addition to profit, we also get very excited about capital. We can take our profit volatility, and by adding in some APRA assumptions, we can come up with a distribution of capital as well. We can have a distribution of capital at each point in time, and then also how much uncertainty is remaining in our forecasts of capital. So once again, the left-hand side graph shows the distribution of capital at each point in time. And it will have very similar features for most insurers to the profit distribution. It'll widen when we have actuarial valuations, if that's where a lot of the uncertainty comes from. It'll widen during cat season, if that's where a lot of the uncertainty comes from. So you get a pattern where for the first few months of the year, it's a relatively small increase in uncertainty, and then once you get past valuations, once you get through the catastrophe season, you get a much bigger increase in the uncertainty. And when you're looking at what's the uncertainty that remains in the year, which is the right-hand graph, you get the opposite. For the first few months of the year in this hypothetical insurer, there's not that much of a reduction in uncertainty because the cat season is still to come, and that's where the uncertainty lies. And the actuarial valuations are still to come, and that's where the uncertainty lies. That's the Cook's tour of the benefits that you get out of it is to answer those sorts of questions, questions which CFOs and finance departments are interested in, and actuarial and risk has a part to play as the owners of uncertainty, in a sense. The next few minutes, we go through some of the issues involved in thinking about monthly DFA as opposed to an annual DFA. What differs when you're looking at things monthly compared to when you're looking at things on an annual timescale? The first thing is premium. Premium is important in and of itself because written premium is often a key target against which insurers and management are managed against. It features prominently in financial reporting, and it's something that management and board will look at regularly. So tracking actual to expected, where you have some idea of the expected level of uncertainty throughout the year, is useful in and of itself. There's also a number of features when looking at a monthly level that influence the uncertainty in premium. While written premium is important in its own right, earned premium is what actually appears on the profit and loss statement. So your monthly profit will be driven by earned premium. And there's a couple of sources of uncertainty that flow into earned premium. They relate to the opening unearned premium and any unclosed business that it includes, and they relate to future written premium. Unclosed is particularly important for commercial insurers, and if you have an unclosed balance, there's a level of uncertainty in that unclosed balance because it is an estimate. So we need to come up with some estimate of how much uncertainty sits in the unclosed. For a direct insurer, everything's processed straight through. There may be no uncertainty in the unearned premium, so the earned premium that derives from that would be certain, but there'll be future uncertainty in the written premium and potentially seasonality in written premium as well. Commercial lines are more likely to have common renewal dates, so you might see seasonality in the written premium. Seasonality in written premium is also important for unearned premium, which is an important part of the balance sheet, has a big impact on capital via APRA premium liabilities and APRA capital base. Catastrophes. Catastrophes is an obvious area of seasonality. The graph here shows Australian CAT experience. So it shows the average catastrophe costs by month for all the data in the Insurance Council's CAT statistics. And you can see that the peak is over the summer months. The uncertainty also follows that peak in average catastrophe volatility. Obviously, if you're running a monthly DFA, you need to estimate CAT seasonality with respect to your own portfolio, because depending on your geographic exposure and your risk exposure, it'll be potentially quite different from what the average Australian experience is. But there would presumably be some level of seasonality in there. In terms of estimating it, in terms of calibrating it, if you already have an annual DFA model, you already have a lot of good CAT information in that annual model. And you can take a lot of the information and use it in the monthly model, so you don't need to recreate a lot of that. The size of catastrophes is less likely to deviate by month than the frequency is. You're going to get a lot more cyclones in the summer months than you do in the winter months. The size of cyclone probably won't vary all that much, or it'll be less of an impact. So you can take your size assumptions from your annual model, and you can come up with frequency assumptions which reflects some pattern like that. And then it'll still link to your annual DFA model, so you have a consistent distribution for CAT costs between monthly and annual models. Non-catastrophe claims will have a number of issues to think about at a monthly level. There could be some level of seasonality in non-CAT claims, just as there are in catastrophe claims. Capturing that at a monthly level is obviously very important. Variability, like seasonality, may differ over the year. So there may be some analysis needed to estimate different periods of volatility throughout the year. When designing the model, there's a question for a monthly model when we're thinking about claims costs about how much detail do we actually need. In an annual DFA model, we tend to have a lot of information. We tend to model cash flows. We tend to model it on an accident year basis. In a monthly model, that may be one area where it can be simplified, where we don't need to worry about accident years. We can just have a look at accounting years, just have a look at the accounting incurred claims per month. We can worry a little bit less about cash flows because we've done all the hard work in our annual DFA. We've got that benchmark, and we can do something a little bit more simple. So there's an area for simplification there. Large claims are also an issue that often get modelled separately in an annual DFA, and it may be worth modelling them in a monthly DFA, primarily for the CFO's benefit or finance's benefit, because they're often reported on separately. So having them as a separate expectation item makes reporting actuals against it a little easier. Reinsurance operates, depending on the type of reinsurance, it can operate quite differently at a monthly level. For many types of reinsurance, you can simplify them away out of your monthly model and just model everything net of reinsurance. And that's because the impact of the reinsurance treaty doesn't really matter what has happened in the previous months. If you've got a per-risk excess of loss treaty with plenty of reinstatements, it doesn't matter if you've just had a big claim 2 months ago. You get the same recoveries on a claim that you have in the current month as you would if you hadn't had the previous claim. Proportional reinsurance is the same. If you had a bad month a few months ago, it doesn't affect the expected recoveries in the current month. Aggregate or stop-loss reinsurance does matter. It matters quite a lot what's happened in the prior months. And for if you've got a catastrophe drop-down or an aggregate deductible, that'll also matter as well. If you have a period of bad experience, you're more likely to get recoveries in that treaty. So one potential area of simplification is reinsurance. For some types of treaties, they could be modelled net. For other types of treaties, there may be a requirement to model them in more detail. Economic assumptions are an important part of an annual DFA model. They're important because the uncertainty in discount rates affects the outstanding claims balance, particularly for longer tail classes. It also ties to investment returns, depending on what an insurer invests in. For a monthly model, the type of insurer would determine if that's important or not, and also how economic assumptions are updated matters as well. If an insurer updates their discount rates every 6 months with evaluation, it's less important to be able to model monthly yield curves than if they are updating yield curves each month. In an annual model, there's typically an economic scenario generator which develops these consistent economic scenarios, so yield curves move in the right way, investment returns move in the right way. If you have an annual ESG, it may well be possible to turn it into a monthly ESG. If that's possible and simple, that's great. It's a very easy part of the monthly modelling. If it's not possible, or if it's difficult, there are some alternative approaches, some interpolation approaches to come up with monthly yield curves which are still sensible and could still be used for a monthly DFA type process. And reserving, what the actuaries do. This matters a lot for monthly profit, and so you would want to capture that in any monthly DFA model to make sure that when there's a revaluation happening, the uncertainty in that month is greater. That depends on the frequency of the valuations, be they quarterly, monthly, half-yearly or annually, and also when the results are booked, because often a valuation might be done as at the 31st of December, but the results may actually be booked in November or in January or February, depending on the insurer. So capturing those dynamics at a monthly level is quite important as well. What happens in non-valuation months will affect the P&L. Does the insurer just hold IBNR constant? Do they use some kind of formula? Those sorts of questions need to be thought about, although it may be simple enough that you can just assume that IBNR is held constant or something like that in a monthly model. The next 2 points, the level of detail and accuracy and the calibration to annual DFA are tied up together with this question. We've assumed that there is an annual DFA available, that the company has an annual DFA, they calibrate it every year, and it will produce a distribution of, well, lots of distributions, it'll produce a distribution of net claims incurred, and it'll produce an annual distribution of profit. With the monthly DFA, we want our monthly DFA to link up to that annual DFA model. We want it to be in sync or calibrated so that you get the same result on an annual basis from both of your models. How we can do that, we can do that with the structure of the monthly DFA by thinking of valuation impacts as almost a goal-seek factor. we've done less work in our annual DFA, we've got a nice distribution, we've done lots of complicated calculations. In our monthly DFA, we've got a reasonable cap model, we've got a simplified monthly claims cost model, and we've got a valuation impact. We don't want to redo all of the annual calculations, that's too complicated, we want to do something simpler. So by assuming that the valuation impact is just a distribution of a particular form, we can parameterise that distribution so that when we add up all of the other components and we get a total net claims incurred distribution from our monthly model, it'll match what we see in our annual model. The two graphs show an example of that. The left-hand side shows a very simple calibration where it doesn't quite match, and the right-hand side shows a calibration with a little more care where it does match. When we're thinking about accuracy of the monthly model, we're really comparing it to the annual model. We're assuming that that's been well calibrated. So there are a number of cases where a good enough calibration may be acceptable. So the left-hand side graph will be fine. If we're only interested in the 10th to the 90th percentile, so sort of the everyday monthly results, then we're not particularly interested in the tails. It doesn't matter what the 1 in 100 year event is if all we're using our monthly DFA model for is estimating everyday volatility around a monthly mean. If you want to start using the monthly DFA model and estimating probabilities of beating a budget is probably in that domain. It's probably looking at between the 10th and the 90th percentile is probably good enough for estimating the probability of achieving budget. We're not using our monthly DFA model for setting reinsurance programs. We're not trying to estimate those very far points in the distribution that you would use for reinsurance or for capital targets. So the left-hand graph will often be good enough for a monthly model, so that means that, you know, there's a good degree of simplification that can happen compared to the annual model. Where you want the model to be used for purposes which are similar, then you might want to have a look at tail percentiles for particular months for capital purposes, then it is possible with the right-hand graph, with a little more care, to come up with a distribution which matches the annual DFA model without having to do all the calculations involved in an annual DFA model. All right, on to a couple of other issues which are less technical. Timeframes. How often do we want to run the model? Typically, we'll run an annual DFA model once. We want to calibrate our monthly DFA model at around the same time. But then throughout the year, do we need to run the model every single month, or can we just use the distribution that we developed at the start of the month? Often, we can just use that distribution. There are some instances where we would need to rerun our model, and that is if the risk profile of the insurer changes materially, we need to rerun the model. If the volumes of the insurer have changed, if they've actually written a lot more business or a lot less business, then that has an influence on the whole size of the insurer, so we need to rerun the model. If claims experience has been good or bad, that doesn't necessarily require a rerun of the model. It's just actual observations from a distribution. It doesn't necessarily change the risk profile. So given that there are a few instances where you would want to rerun the model, a degree of flexibility would be required in a monthly model. There's also a number of applications in the table where a monthly DFA model would be used. They're the green boxes in the lower half. So things like investment decisions, when we can estimate the uncertainty around the remainder of the profit in the year, that helps to inform whether we should be changing investments. It helps with paying dividends. If we know when capital requirements are highest, when there's the most uncertainty, we can avoid paying dividends directly before that. We can wait until a lot of the uncertainty has reduced. The last two slides show some additional outputs that might be useful for a CFO in assessing and communicating the monthly uncertainty. The first slide, this slide, is the quantification of uncertainty by source and also by month. Source is catastrophe claims versus valuation risk versus non-catastrophe claims versus premium volumes. The amount of uncertainty due to each of those factors changes throughout the year. As we work through the cat season, the cat volatility drops off. As we pass an actuarial valuation, a lot of that uncertainty crystallises and it's no longer future uncertainty, so we can take those out of our projections. This is a tool for communicating the sources of uncertainty throughout the year. The final slide is just a mock-up of what a report might look like for a CFO. A typical monthly report would have actual and budget, year-to-date, and it would have variances. With a monthly DFA, we can add a couple of additional interesting pieces of information. We can add the probability of seeing the actual variance for the year-to-date compared to the original budget. We can add a reforecast. We can add confidence intervals around that reforecast. And we can add the probability of achieving the full year budget given where we are to date. We can do those things with a monthly model because we can allow for the particular season or the particular pattern of seasonality and uncertainty throughout the year, which you are unable to do with an annual model where it looks at a full 12-month period. And that's it. Time for questions.
Okay. I might just start with one, Francis. So what have you seen actually happening in practice? Do insurers allow for things in as much detail, or do they maybe just have a budget with some seasonality and a couple of scenario models?
I think in practice, you just basically don't tend to get these kind of statistics. So you've got the annual volatility, which might be referred to. But I think 99% of the time when we're dealing with companies, what we see is the finance area revert to a central estimate approach the minute they get underway. So they might start the year with an approach that says we might need this much capital. We've got an impairment risk or a capital target centred around a 2% risk of becoming insolvent. This means we need this much capital, and then they start the year and then they spend the rest of the year saying, are we going to be above or below budget based on our reforecast? And there's not a lot of second-guessing about the likelihood of that. At least that's what we find. Yeah. So I can't really give you too many other case studies around anything a bit more scientific. I think there probably are the odd exception out there who might maybe look at this sort of thing six-monthly. And do a bit of a reforecast depending on the strategic situation of the business. And that will often be for a company that's in trouble, I would imagine, where there's been a bit of a drop in the capital position and perhaps one or two interested parties have asked them to have a look at what the likelihood is of their capital position actually reaching a certain target by the end of the year.
There's a speaker there.
Just a quick question. That was really good, actually. I took quite a lot of notes there as well while you were talking. In terms of estimating the monthly volatility, I have to admit, I was looking at it going, this sounds a great idea, but bloody hell, that looks a lot of work to actually do it accurately. Even getting annual volatility can be pretty damn hard. And then you're trying to come up with something monthly, which would vary by month. And then you want to tie it back ideally so that it's not a million miles away from your annual volatility too. How much data, can you realistically use versus how much of it will be judgment? And how long does that take? Because I'm just thinking I already have quite a lot on. I don't want to do this, but shit, it looks like a lot of work.
No, you're right. I think one of the ideas here is actually to avoid work. Nobody wants to do a monthly DFA model in all its gory detail. But a lot of companies already have the annual one, so how do you actually leverage that? And that was the idea here, is how do you leverage that? What simplifications can you make versus what do you actually need to take seriously? And unfortunately, there are a few extra things, like the seasonality, that you really just... that is part of the point of taking it to monthly, is to take those things seriously. On the other hand, when we look at it, we see that the company DFA model that has 100 classes of business in it doesn't need 100 classes of business on a monthly level. So we would look at that and collapse as many of those down to maybe 5 or 10 classes at most, if that's all we need, and then take things like the cat risk seriously, because they're the things that are going to add some value on a monthly level. So in terms of data, if you've got pricing actuaries and reserving actuaries, they should be able to tell you what the seasonality is in the losses. And often quarterly is enough. You know, you don't need to take it to monthly, or you can just extrapolate monthly from quarterly data. The cat stuff, I think a good reinsurance broker should be able to tell you a little bit about catastrophe seasonality and turn it into a monthly RMS model, perhaps. I've seen that done. So I think we're looking for shortcuts to get to that monthly model, not looking to make it more complicated than it needs to be. So things like the reinsurance, for instance, we would certainly go straight to net wherever that makes sense. And by and large, it does make sense. You'd probably put explicit cat treaties in there because cat's one of the things you're focused on. But unless you've got significant aggregate deductible stop-loss type of treaties where you need to do it across throughout the year, and arguably if you do have those, you probably should be modelling it monthly. If you don't have those, then you can take quite a few shortcuts in that department. So I think our focus, I think as Francis said, was that we're looking at the kind of information that the CFO might want to be able to say around the likelihood of hitting certain profit results. We're not looking at him to be able to restate the 1.2% likelihood of going broke every month. You know, that's a kind of a that's an outcome of a fairly complex annual DFA process that you don't really need to do every month. But we're looking at sort of statistics with a little bit more tolerance in them that you can get away with a bit more simplification.
And if you could just say your name and where you work, thanks.
Daniel Keating, Genworth. So the presentation was very much about a short tail context. Have you found there's much scope for going to more granular DFA modelling for longer tail classes?
It does depend on the particular company. There are, if there are features which mean that there is clear seasonality, or some feature which means the monthly result is not just a linear interpolation from annual down to zero, then there's some benefit in doing it. And there are, and for long tail classes, there may be classes where the claims volatility is similar throughout the year. So you don't get any benefit from doing monthly modelling if you've got no seasonality in claims cost and the uncertainty is the same throughout the year. But the valuation impact is going to be very big, because the longer the tail, the bigger the liabilities, the bigger the potential P&L impact of a valuation. So that's where it becomes very valuable to be able to even say, well, the valuation happens twice a year, the results get booked in these months, this is where the uncertainty resides, then we've got a lot of uncertainty up until valuation one, it halves, we have no uncertainty after valuation two. The actual characteristics of the claims don't matter so much. It's more looking at the uncertainty in the total net claims incurred for each month, which you'll have time series of that from historical data. Unless there is particular seasonality, though. For long tail, it's really evaluation impact and possibly capital impacts, depending on how capital works. So I don't think it's all that much more difficult than a short tail insurer, because we're not doing a lot of the detailed claims modelling. We're assuming that's already done in the annual model. I think there is still some benefit, though, because there are non-linear things that happen throughout the year, like valuation.
I'll just add to that, I think the discount rate effect is also something that, for a long-tail insurer, the combination of that and the timing of the actuarial valuation process, where you're essentially kind of dividing a lot of the annual volatility into, say, two periods or quarterly, depending on how often you do the liability valuations. That and the timing of discount rate movements are probably the two most important things. So a good question that a CFA might get asked is, how much residual discount rate uncertainty do I have on the balance sheet? You know, I've got to post profit final results. Yield curve is here. How much more interest rate volatility have I got left? Those kind of questions are the sort of questions we're looking at as being fairly dominant for a long tail class. Plus, to some extent, inflation, but that's a little harder to predict.
Any particular system requirements for this?
No. I think it's... we've looked at it from simple things like at-risk, just basic simulation software, which kind of run in Excel, to, you know, the more sophisticated systems like Rometrica, where you're programming in the whole box and dice, anywhere in between. But I think you are looking at something with some sort of simulation capabilities. It doesn't need to be super complicated though. And to be frank, you don't want to be running anything that takes a long time to run every month.
My name's Mary from Kibi. Just wanted to know, sometimes even with annual models, it can be very hard to parameterise because of, you know, the nature of the portfolio. If we then sort of try and boil it down even further, more granular, I guess, by going monthly, could that lead us to kind of think, oh, we know more than we actually do? Does it give the user a misleading impression of how things are?
I guess, I mean, there's a risk of that. There's a risk every time an actuary provides a central estimate that they're suggesting they know a little bit too much. I think the focus of this is the reducing uncertainty over the course of the year, or just how quick that should be. You know, a lot of people, the assumption you might otherwise make is that it just linearly reduces over the course of the year. And I think anyone who's been involved in closing accounts for a company knows just how much can change in the last few days, let alone the last few months. So I think a proper examination of how much uncertainty exists on the balance sheet in the months leading up to profit release would educate you on just how much value you might get out of a process that actually holds back some of the uncertainty in the model and keeps everyone on their toes in terms of, well, sure, this is our forecast profit, but there's still this much uncertainty around it, even a week out from finalising our results. And that may well be reality. There may be businesses where that's just not true either. It may be other businesses where a lot of the uncertainty washes out a lot sooner. But I've seen quite a few things move in the last dying days of a set of accounts which have surprised a lot of people. And I think they're the sorts of things that CFOs worry about a lot. So I think there's some value in it.
Nicole from Suncorp. I'm wondering how resilient is the model, because we are now talking about on business as usual scenario. But when something major does happen and the economic environment or the business model does change drastically, then presumably I think you may have to recalibrate your model with lots of times and efforts, and it may just break down at a moment when you actually need it.
It's this sort of process. I mean, it's the same for an annual model. It's a prospective one. This is the prospective uncertainty. So the fact that you may have just lost, you know, you might have just gone past your liability valuation and put another 200 million of loss in the bank because someone wrote down your provisions might change the size of your balance sheet. You might suddenly have more liabilities, but it doesn't necessarily change the prospective view of the uncertainty. So I don't think there are a few things that might cause you to recalibrate, and those would be things that change your entire view about the uncertainty of a class of business perhaps that you're dealing with. It would be things that suddenly reveal to you that you really didn't understand your CTP portfolio, or you didn't really understand the equity portfolio that you are holding. You know, it's actually something different. If it's just behaved like an equity portfolio does, it goes up and down, then that hasn't changed anything. You can always, these models can be recalibrated to a different starting point, so a higher capital position or a lower capital position. Perhaps you might even adjust your expectation of average profits, but I think you'd really be looking, you wouldn't be recalibrating unless you found something that changed your fundamental view of the uncertainty of that particular risk driver. And I don't think those things should happen too often.
Okay, that's it. So if you can just join me in thanking Francis and Scott for an exciting presentation.